Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 30th, 2014. A UN spokesman says UN forces in Abyei are succeeding in keeping peace between Masiria and Dinkangok.
We assess the success or failure of a mission based on what happens to the people on the ground.
And the head of UN mission in South Sudan says she's leaving her post in July.
It's been a real honor to serve, and I will still be here for a few weeks. But South Sudan really has a strong place in my heart. I will continue to have that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Security Council this week extended the mandate of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei or UNISFA until October. UNISFA spokesman Daniel Adekera says the extension is a sign that the Ethiopian force, tasked with monitoring and verifying the demilitarization of Abyei, has managed to create a peaceful environment for the two warring Masiria and the Dinkangok. He says the peacekeepers are doing everything they can to uphold the law and maintain order in the contested Abyei area.
Normally, we don't experience much conflict around this time because the Masiria community should be migrating back north, so there's less contact. The only problem might be cattle rustling. Other than that, we don't expect much conflict. So I can say the area is quite stable for now.
The UN Security Force for Abyei, for how long has it been there?
It was established June 2011. So we are talking of about 3 years now.
Looking at the past 3 years, would you say this is a successful mission?
So far, it is quite successful. I mean, it's good to appreciate that before the mission was established, remember, there were a series of conflicts. And most of the times, the Abyei town was in crisis. Now we have quite some stability. The Dinka tribes, particularly, that had run away, they are coming back. And many are engaging in their normal farming activities, which was not possible in 2011. Or before 2011. So we assess the success or failure of a mission based on what happens to the people on the ground. And if people were not able to carry out their activities, are now engaging in their normal activities, and livelihood is coming back, and there's less conflict compared to how it was before the establishment of the mission, we can say to a large extent that this some modest gains we're making, and I can say it is successful.
And this mission is operating in a situation where the area is contested by the two countries, and the promises that were supposed to be fulfilled by the two countries, for instance, the formation of the Abyei administrative area, the Abyei administrative police, has not been done. How is that impacting on your day-to-day operation in the area?
Well, it's quite stressful on our part because we have to bend backwards to do what the area police should have been doing in terms of maintaining law and order. We don't have police contingents aside from police advisors. So you find that they are doing what the area police should have been doing. That's not even our mandate. But when there is security breaches and we are here, sometimes we just have to do what we think should do in the interim to maintain law and order. So it's impacting very heavily on us in that it's overstretching our human and material resources.
And since the beginning of this mission, how many troops from your mission have been killed in the area? Because we've been hearing a lot of stories about attacks on the UN forces in Abyei.
We have lost 13 so far. Not all of them died in conflict. Some of them died as a result of illness. some as a result of road accidents. A few died as a result of hostilities with the local community.
Let's talk about the hostilities with the local communities. I mean, you have the Meseria there and the Dinkangok in the area. Among these two groups, who are giving you headache?
So initially, we had challenges with people understanding what we're here to do. But I think by now, we are receiving positive signals from both sides. And I wouldn't talk of giving us headache. I would just say that whatever challenges we had was on account of the fact that they didn't quite understand what we're doing. Now we have cooperation from all the sides, and I think so far we are doing well.
That's Daniel Adekera, spokesperson for the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei. He was speaking to me earlier today from Abyei town. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon marked International Peacekeeping Day this week by praising the UN mission in South Sudan for providing protection to civilians during the fighting, and in the Democratic Republic of Congo for defeating rebels of M23. Hilde Johnson, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says she told President Salva Kiir today she will be stepping down when her contract expires in July. Johnson has held the position for nearly 3 years. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Johnson says she delivered the news to President Kiir this morning.
And so I informed the president that by Independence Day, in July, I will have completed my 3 years as special representative, which is much more than usual for an SRG in a peacekeeping mission of this nature, and in particular also with the crisis that we've gone through.
Officials in the Ministries of Information and Foreign Affairs and in the Office of the President say they are not authorized to comment on Johnson's announcement. But it is no secret that Hilde Johnson has not had an easy time in Juba. The South Sudan government has been particularly critical of UNMISS operations in the months since fighting broke out. At one point, President Kiir even accused the mission of attempting to run a federal government, but later distanced himself from those remarks. Johnson herself has come in for a specific criticism. During an anti-UN demonstration in Juba in March, protesters carried signs with Hilde's image, accusing her of killing the people of South Sudan. The protests followed the discovery of weapons in an overland UNMISS convoy by South Sudan security officials. The mission is prohibited from carrying weapons by land by South Sudan. It also violated their own protocols. Hilde Johnson called it a mistake. Protesters accused UNMISS of trying to arm opposition forces, a charge UN officials vehemently denied. At today's announcement, Johnson did not take any questions and declined to say why she was leaving or whether she was given the option of renewing her contract.
It's been a real honor to serve, and I will still be here for a few weeks, but South Sudan really has a strong place in my heart. I will continue to have that.
The move comes just days after the UN Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution to extend UNMISS mandate by 6 months. The resolution also changed UNMISS focus to the immediate needs of protecting civilians and ending the violence, rather than fierce consolidation and long-term state and economic development. UNMISS officials have declined to say who will be appointed to replace Johnson or if her successor will be in place by the time she leaves in early July. For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Leben Nelson Moreau is a political commentator and a professor of development studies at Juba University. He tells my colleague Charlton Doki that poor relations between the UN and the government since December may have influenced Johnson's decision to step down.
This should be taken in the context, I think, of the difficult relationship between the UNMISS and the government. Of late, I think the relationship have not been very good, because I think since the fighting started in December, then there's been serious problems, I think partly also to do with the many civilians, people who fled to the UN bases to seek for security. I think the government probably would very much like those people to come out. And then both sides are being blamed for perpetuating these abuses. then they also have this mandate to investigate what is happening as far as human rights are concerned. And this definitely puts it in a difficult position from both sides. I think also the other problem is to do with how much freedom was given to the armies to be able to operate in terms of movement of the peacekeepers. I think there are also accusations of restrictions being put on the way the armies would like to operate or the ways is to operate. That also probably is an issue, yeah.
Will her resignation lead to an improvement in relations between the UN mission here and the government?
I think probably that will depend on the person who is going to take over the job. If that person is seen by the government to be doing a good job in the government's point of view, then maybe the relationship will get better.
What do you think Hilda Johnson will be remembered for in South Sudan?
Well, I think Hilda Johnson, she knows South Sudan very well. She was involved in the negotiations leading to the signing of the CPA. I think at one point she really had very good relationship with the government. It is only the time when the recent violence started is that is the time. From that time, then the relationship became tense. And I think different people will look at her contribution in different ways. Probably the people in the government will probably have some, she will say, well, she didn't do a good job. Because, of course, they had very difficult relationship towards the end of her term. But for people who are in the UN bases seeking refuge, I think they will remember that she did her best. She tried very hard to ensure that people who feel insecure outside, they found some security in the UN bases, even though the conditions are bad. They found some safety within the UN bases. I think they will remember that.
Given her experience in South Sudan, do you think she could still play another role in terms of moving the current peace process forward?
I think her experience and expertise is good. She could play a positive role. But definitely it depends on the view of the key parties to the conflict, especially the government side.
That's Dr. Leben Nelson Moreau, a political commentator and a professor of development studies at Juba University, speaking to my colleague Charlton Doki in Juba earlier today.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Every year, the rainy season brings a sharp rise in the number of people who get malaria. It's a very serious disease that can result in death. That's why it's very important to protect yourself and your family from mosquitoes that spread malaria. Health experts suggest these things to minimize your risk. Wear clothes that cover as much of the body as possible. Stay indoors at night when mosquitoes are the most active. Use bed nets treated with insecticides and seek medical advice for any persistent fever, chills, headache, or sweats, symptoms that could indicate you have malaria.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What kind of job do you think the United Nations mission in South Sudan has done? Some of you have comments on that when we come back.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is technology affecting traditional storytelling?
I don't see any reason why it can affect traditional storytelling, because it is the means or the mechanism in which it can improve the storytelling.
I think technology adds value to history by preserving it.
No, it's not, because technology doesn't coincide with tradition. There is time you tell stories with your families, and there is time you watch TVs and listen to radios.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Uten. It's time for your comments. Several of you this week commented on the work of the United Nations in South Sudan. Emmanuel from Yambio says, I would like to thank all UN peacekeepers and NGOs for the great job they are doing to serve our people in the midst of all the difficulties the country has faced since the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement up to now. James Manasseh, also from Yambio, writes, the presence of UNMISS in our new country is very important for many reasons, the main one being that since the outbreak of fighting in December, thousands of our people have sought protection in UNMISS camps in order to secure their lives. Manasseh asks, had UNMISS not been here, what would have happened to these people by now? On the topic of trying to attain peace in South Sudan, Chol Philip Quer from Bortown, Jonglei State, says, during his trip to Kenya, Riek Machar should focus on how to end this visionless war in South Sudan and not worsen the war into genocide. He adds, he should not add insult to injury. Robert Samuel from Yambio, Western Equatoria State, writes, I want to remind our leaders that peace is very vital to all human beings. When there is insecurity, we lose our dignity, property, and everything. Samuel asks, for how long are we going to continue losing our loved ones in this war? We are one nation, one people, and have one God. Peter Oyel in Western Equatoria State says, it is really a golden chance for the South Sudanese that we are visited by our brother, mediator Lazarus Sambiao. My appeal to our leaders is, let's not miss this chance. He continues, give peace to South Sudanese people who have suffered a lot for almost 50 years. Please, our leaders, let's forgive each other for our children to go to school for their future. Angelo Massine from Yambio writes, since we won independence, we have never enjoyed real peace at all because of tribalism and disunity among ourselves. Our common tribe should be South Sudanese. And finally, Michael Mawich Kwong Matian in Juba says, we are for peace, not war. Peace should be our only way forward, as war will only destroy our future. Kwong adds, we will progress in peace, but fail in war. We want to hear what you have to say. You can text us or find us on the web at South Sudan in Focus at voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
We read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of the commentator only. The comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or the Voice of America. A Sudanese woman who was sentenced to death earlier this month for refusing to renounce her Christian faith gave birth to a baby girl earlier this week in a Khartoum prison. VOA fellow May Abdul Nasir has this report from Washington.
27-year-old Maryam Yahya has been in prison since February, when she was charged with adultery and apostasy. Her lawyer, Muhammad Abdel Nabi, says Maryam gave birth early Tuesday morning in the hospital clinic of a prison in Omdurman.
She gave birth to a baby girl in a clinic inside the prison, aided by a midwife employed by the prison administration. Her baby was named Maya, We, the defense team, along with her husband, went to see her and give her some supplies, but we were shocked that the prison administration would not allow us to visit. They said the warden gave instructions that no one should be allowed to visit her. So we went to see the warden, and after a long negotiation, he allowed us to visit twice a week.
In a statement, Father Kuri, the General Secretary for the Council of Churches in Sudan, says they consider that Mariam is being persecuted for being Christian in Sudan. Kuri says Christians have been persecuted ever since President Omar al-Bashir vowed to impose strict Islamic law in Sudan after the South Sudan gained independence in 2011.
They want to force her to leave Christianity and to accept Islam. And in fact, the Muslim here, they want the government to use force to turn all Christians to become Muslims.
Lawyer Nabil Adib says Sudan's constitution guarantees freedom of religion and says the state should respect Mariam's freedom to choose her religion.
This is against the constitution because Section 38 of the constitution gives freedom of religion and cherishes that, and it protects people who have changed their religion, and it says that nobody should be coerced to adopt a religion he doesn't believe in.
Adib says only one person has been executed for apostasy in Sudan.
There was a few cases of apostasy, but none of them was executed, except one case that was back in 1985 when Mahmoud Muhammad Taha was executed for being apostate. But actually, he was Muslim and he remained Muslim, and he was just having some sort of different ideas about Islam.
Others who were accused of apostasy had converted from Islam to another religion, but went back to Islam and were spared. Mary was raised in the Christian faith. Her husband, Daniel Wane, says he is delighted over his newborn daughter, Maya, but is outraged at the authorities for forcing his wife to give birth with her legs shackled. Mariam's lawyer says they are filing papers in court to appeal the government's decision this week. In the meantime, Mariam remains in prison. For VOA News, I am May Abdel Nasser in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Ukraine's acting defense minister vowed today to continue a military offensive against pro-Russian rebels in the country's east after an attack in the region, at least 12 servicemen. Mykhailo Koval said his forces have cleared the southern and western regions of the city of Donetsk and of separatists, as well as a northern region of Lugansk. He said the mission will continue until peace and order are restored. Koval spoke a day after separatists shot down a military helicopter near the flashpoint eastern city of Slovyansk. Pakistani police say they have arrested four people in connection with the case of a pregnant woman bludgeoned to death in the eastern city of Lahore by her family for marrying a man of her choice. Police say the detainees include the woman's uncle and two cousins. Yesterday, Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif issued a statement directing the chief minister of Punjab province, of which Lahore is the capital, to take immediate action. Police say 25-year-old Farzana Parveen was beaten with bricks outside a courthouse on Tuesday as she waited to tell a judge she married a man of her own free will. And finally, Malawi's High Court is set to rule today on whether last week's disputed election results should be made public or a recount should be held. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
A music center in Wau has graduated its first class of students yesterday. The center, which opened late last year, is the only one of its kind in the state, offering students with a chance to study guitar organ, drums, and other musical instruments. Michael Atit attended the graduation ceremony and has the story from WOW.
Before receiving their certificates, the new graduates delighted the audience by performing some of the songs that they have learned over the past 6 months. Guitarist Sabrine Erneo Camilo was one of the first two female graduates from the Santa.
My experience with music was very limited. You know, I hardly know the chords. I hardly know how to write even music. I did not know before. So when I came here, the first thing that they have told me is how to write music, note. You know, the music note, and even how to read it.
Camilo says she plans to use her musical training to try to unify South Sudan through song.
It's very simple. If you want some people to join together, if you have played any music, any kind of music, you will find people just gathering in the place. Because music is attracting. It attracts people. And through the music, you can just give them any message. Any message that you want, message of love, message of peace, and this is what we need in South Sudan. We need peace.
Santa Director Addison Arcangelo Musa says he hopes the students do not stop there. He says he helped create the Santa so that young people would start learning about their culture roots.
We play different music, we play different songs from all the 10 states. I know the importance of traditional and local music. This is the main objects we are just doing behind to find out the real music of South Sudan.
The state government funds the school. Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan told graduates officials are gratified to see this day, but says they want to see more from the graduates.
We seek to improve musical performance in the state. And that was part of the directives I gave to the instructor here at the Institute, Mr. Addison, that the next batch graduating who are still under training right now must each conduct research on the musical instrument they're trying to master. When it comes to music and art, our state is always taking the lead.
Arcangelo says more than 40 students have signed up for the next round of classes, which are scheduled to start next week. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
That's all we had for you this Friday and the end of May. We now leave you with a beautiful song by Kasiriga group from Western Bahar El Ghazal State, who are singing about men who are jealous.
Safir Ngbala, Mudiria, Persozi Kawina. Anidong.
We have been listening to Kasirga group with the song Indingo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and stop being jealous. Remember to join us again next month for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Adangama.